We're back. It's a Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. And I see that a question I had hoped to put to Harry, or at least a quote, I thought he would enjoy it, but it slipped by me as I was doing what we usually do when you ask questions. You're fumbling around looking at your papers. I'm like a lawyer. Anyhow, Edward Burghardt, chairman of MM&A, said one of the many questions raised by Lac Mégantic tragedy is whether the hazards posed by shipping Bakken crude by rail should be reassessed. Quotes, it looks like it was much more dangerous than we were, here's my word, predisposed to believe. He was predisposed to believe something. But by the way, why wasn't he predisposed to be suspicious? I mean, like an ordinary healthy person.
Well, first of all, crude petroleum is not a benign substance, even if it wasn't fiddled with. And in fact, that's only a theory now, that there was something else in there. That's just a theory. It's dangerous regardless, right? Which he should know.
We're talking about something that hadn't been established, right. but there's a big question mark. Yes. Yeah. Which is, you should knock out your predisposition.
well, absolutely. But it's also the casual way in which unsafe practices build up, you know, cutting the size of train crews, leaving trains on the main line, not putting on enough brakes, all of this stuff.
Well, by the way, how about the mediocre cars?
Well, that's another issue, and I have to say that a lot of these cars were manufactured in an earlier era, and time and experience has taught rail operators that they need to toughen them up and stuff like that. We used to have a thriving industry in Canada of manufacturing these tank cars. There was a factory in Nova Scotia and a factory in Hamilton. They were both represented by the steel workers. There were a couple of thousand workers in the two places, and they made a very, very good living, and they did a good job. And the capitalists shut them down.
Yeah, inhibiting the free workings of capitalism.
Yes.
They should have a hiring hall like in on the waterfront and throw out the who wants to work today.
Yeah, well, absolutely. if you move production around the world, what you don't do is you don't build up a group of experienced veteran people constructing these rail cars, right? You change, you know, because you move the factory to Mexico 1 year, then the next year, say, the Mexicans are getting uppity. We're going to move it to Guatemala. We're going to move it to Bangladesh.
Yes.
We're going to, you know, and then you don't really have an industry with a workforce that knows what it's doing.
Right. If you have 10 guys, people working on a job for 10 years, thousands of hours of experience. And something emerges, and they, between them, begin to figure out what the problem is.
That's exactly right.
If a guy has never been to that intersection before, says, which way do I turn?
Well, and let me name that company. It was called National Steel Car. It was in Hamilton, and an awful lot of people made a very good living working there, and they built a very, very good product, right?
Yeah. You get that, what, in an antique store?
Right.
Here's another quote from MM&A guy. Nobody knew what they were carrying. I can assure you, CP didn't know any more than we did, Mr. Burghardt said. But you know...
Well, by the way, CP hasn't said that. I think Burghardt is like jabbing his partner in the ribs there.
As I've been doing more reading on this, and again, I do recommend Professor Harry Glasspeak's article, The Presumed Innocence of Capitalism and Lac Mégantic, point about why he is saying, the point about why Burghardt is speaking this way, I think it may have to do with his own legal problems.
Yes.
Because there are companies that are not pleased with him and his company.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if you have an altercation, three or four companies are involved, and one of them says, well, I didn't know anything, the other three... He knows he's leaving them hanging out.
Well,
to dry.
It's like when the cops are.
Who was responsible?
It's like when the cops are on a bunch of gangsters, right? They will start pointing fingers at each other if the cops look sufficiently interested in, you know.
The omerta doesn't exist, by the way. That's a fairy tale.
No, exactly.
We can't find a mobster anymore that hasn't ratted on his friends. So the romance of the mobster should come to a.
I'm sure CP is thinking that Burghardt is very ungrateful because, of course, they handed over to him all kinds of track at bargain prices, and he's made a mess.
And we did. I keep coming back to that. Whose country is this? If you have somebody who behaves as this company did, and by the way he personally did, We had a mess in the Gulf where they said, well, the guy from British Petroleum was a classic example how not to behave. So, you know, the clock goes around and we have this one. And then he does the same thing. And it's because when they walk up, they are still that big shot. And you are peons. And they talk the way big shots talk. And then somebody taps them on the shoulder and said, you know, some of these people have pitchforks. You know, you want to be kind of careful. And then they kind of dial it back. But
or they hire a PR guy who tells them how to say it.
But where is our enforcement mentality? Frankly, you know, in China, if a capitalist oversteps, they actually have capital punishment for people who misappropriate huge amounts of money or create disasters, which they could demonstrate that they had knowledge that this could happen. Nobody here goes to jail for anything. Nobody, you know, when he showed up there, why not say, well, you're not leaving. You're the guy, right? This is your train? We have a mess here. You stay right here with us. Why not? But we're all afraid. I mean, Harry's point is, I mean, it seems to me that this is really the classic case of, it's like with the royals. Oh, that's a royal. No, step aside, bow, take your hat off. The royal is about to go by. Actually, it's just one of us, actually, in costume. So we need to say, no, somebody act on our behalf. He quoted Jean Chrétien, I'm not signing any agreement that doesn't have this in it. That's a nice quote. So live it up to it. But he didn't live up to it any more than Bill Clinton, Obama, any of these people. You're listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. That article, again, is socialistproject.ca/bullet. There's a number, 858. That's the number of the latest. And also Climate and Capitalism. You can find the article by Harry Glasspiegel. Now, on some other matters, I want to make sure I say that on Tuesday, tomorrow, August the 6th, at 6:45 p.m. at City Hall, there will be a commemoration of the August 6th bombing of Hiroshima, Nagasaki. On another program, I told the story. I always find it odd to repeat, but of course, if we have different listeners, I'm going to just mention I read a very long interview with a number of philosophers around the world on the issue of how we comprehend the use of such a horrific weapon as the nuclear bomb. And the instance in which these philosophers focused was Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Hiroshima was bombed first, and then about a week later, Nagasaki. And the Japanese philosopher, who I would say is closer to the subject than others, said he had read and studied and everything that anybody involved had said and what we knew about the production of the bomb, etc. And he said the question he was asking himself was, he understood how they might have used and could have brought themselves to use the bomb in Hiroshima. He said that it's a horrible war, crimes, no question the crimes of Japanese imperialism. Leaders whose names were considered unspeakable, like Tojo and Hirohito, which were the equivalent of Hitler. We don't hear them mentioned anymore. Hitler is now the champ. I mean, he's him and the devil are top spot. But these names were awful names, and certainly in the Philippines and China, everywhere. So he said, I understand. You have fight a bloody war for 4 years, and this is the kind of thing that might happen. But he said, but why the second bomb, the one at Nagasaki? And he said he finally realized that the answer was they only had two. And that's the only thing that inhibited them from further. It's a horrible story to tell, but I'm afraid I agree with it. Tomorrow, Tuesday, 6:45, there is going to be a commemoration.
At City Hall. And
City
also
Hall, Toronto. If you're in Chicago, right. It'll be somewhere else.
Yeah, that's right. But there will be an exhibit in the lobby of City Hall, which is an old tradition because we do have a very active Hiroshima remembrance community in Toronto, and they do organize this every year. So there will be an exhibit of photography and I think artwork having to do with the bombing in the City Hall Rotunda for the balance of the week, just for 4 days. We're grateful for that.
And then tomorrow at 12 o'clock,
at 12 o'clock
Classical Underground.
Right, Classical Underground. Ted Schmidt, who's one of the conveners of the demonstration tomorrow night, will be our guest. He is the author of Never Neutral. And we will play the music of Masao Oki, Leonard Bernstein, and Lehman Engel, and have the poetry of Allen Ginsberg to commemorate the bombing of Hiroshima.
And another matter, there's going to be a book launch, Fear of a Black Nation, by Dave Austin. And it is the story of the Black Power movement in the United States, and also in Trinidad and Tobago, Walter Rodney of Guyana. And it's an important study, and it's going to be, the book will be launched Thursday, August the 8th at 7, from 7 to 9 p.m. at a different book list, 746 Bathurst, Fear of a Black Nation. You know, with the Zimmerman case and so many other cases, the prisons full of African Americans, the subject of a black nation should be talked about, because anybody remembers the period of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. Now they are statues, and people are putting quotes on them that don't quite match what their sentiments were. Would remember that black power was an expression which might mean necessary to bring back into usage, because if you have systemic exploitation, systemic police violence, systemic incarceration of people, then it has to be faced as an issue involving, part of resolution, black power. I noticed, by the way, that in the Caribbean states have agreed that they are going to seek compensation, not just an apology, but compensation for the slave period of their history. And people say, well, you know, they should put that behind them, you know, et cetera. Well, France didn't put it behind France. When France left Haiti, which had been a plantation, slave plantation state from which they extracted tremendous wealth. When the slaves freed themselves later to negotiate recognition of Haiti and to have further relations in the entering into modern history, France demanded compensation. And Haiti paid compensation to their slave owners at the price of having been owned by them. They paid that to France into the 1950s. So there is a precedent, France. There is a precedent, Britain. There is a precedent, America. Pay them back. When the slave owners didn't want to give up their slaves, they said, well, we'll buy them. You know, but fortunately, they wanted to have a slave nation, slave owners nation. And so they were willing to go to war. A pack of traitors declared war in the United States in order to keep their slaves. But the idea was, well, no, we'll compensate you. You know, in other words, you have 1,000 people harvesting tobacco, cotton, and being whipped and tied to stakes, et cetera, and sold as property. So we will compensate you. They were ready to compensate the slave owners. Well, how about compensating now the slaves, the former slaves? And by the way, that's a lot of dough. You know, everybody's outlook changes if they had money in their pocket. And if they can look 5 years in the future and know that they are secure, their outlook changes. America is probably unlikely to be big enough to confront this, but I'm all in favor of their having to. Apropos, I don't know, did we mention him, Robert E. Lee, on our program to remind everybody he's a traitor? The Americans are very unhappy with this guy. What's his name? Power? I don't know. What's the name of the guy in SNA? Snowden. Mr. Snowden's a terrible traitor, blah, blah. Robert E. Lee, a United States Army general, returned to the state of Virginia and organized an army and attacked the flag of America and killed American civilians and soldiers, and they built statues to him. So they love traitors. They actually stroke them and kiss their horse's butt. And they say they don't like traitors. No, they embrace them. So maybe that should be the philosophy of everybody. No, just, you know, build a statue to Snowden. I mean, you built one for Robert E. Lee. And by the way, you haven't showed that Snowden caused you any harm. Matter of fact, you claim it didn't cause any harm. You say, oh, that was nothing. But we're going to hang him. You say, if it's nothing, why are you going to hang him? But Anyway, I want to tell you about Lee. Lee went into Pennsylvania, a free state, where there were no slaves, but there were black Americans living there, freemen. So when he attacked Gettysburg, he had already captured these freemen who were black. He, after being defeated at Gettysburg, retreated back to Maryland and Virginia with his army, Virginia, and he took those freemen with him as slaves, and he sold them. They were sold, not by him personally, of course. He's too big for that. He's a general, you know, and he's got to have his picture taken sitting on a horse. But they captured free Americans and took them back and sold them. So if people want to romanticize these characters, you know, really need to grow up. That the greatest victory in North American history was won when the Confederacy was defeated in the American Civil War. I want to congratulate, just to segue here, the Al-Quds demonstration took place on Saturday in Toronto. It was not publicized at all that I'm aware of. It was a good-sized demonstration. It was well-organized. It was peaceful. It was orderly. And to those who want to cause problems for Muslims and to rant and rave, I suppose we should give them a negative congratulations. They prevented these peaceful demonstrators from gathering in front of Queen's Park. They had to go to the park north, you see. But it was, some people considered it important that we not show freedom of speech on that level. And the main claim that, you know, after all they're talking about Al-Quds, that is Jerusalem. Jerusalem is understood to be an entity which is in negotiations as to how it's going to be apportioned, but one portion that goes to the Palestinians. Anybody who cares about the Palestinian issue understands Jerusalem / Al-Quds is part of that. And there are leaders in Israel who say, no, it's never going to be anything except an Israeli city. Well, and they say it, and people differ. But if you say the opposite, well, then you must be prevented from having a demonstration. Anyway, I congratulate them for a large demonstration and well organized and orderly, and that's very much to their credit. Phil, we ought to say something about baseball, apropos of capitalism, sport, and what we were just talking about with Harry. I think that the focus on Rodriguez is the wrong place. To me, the focus should be with management. They knew, you knew, I knew that drugs were being, PEDs, performance-enhancing drugs, were being used. So who pays the price? The player only. I don't mind, but you know, if you have a boss that winks at you and you go about your business and you make a lot of money and he keeps winking and he keeps selling tickets, how come you're the only one? When they say, oh, hey, that was bad. You, the ball player. The way to stop it would be to say to the Yankees and the Blue Jays, we're going to shut you guys down if you do this. You're not going to have a franchise. Then there won't be anybody using PED. Not at all. But if you've watched the city loyalty around these ball players, you notice that there is a kind of understanding. We hope you get away with it because we like it when you hit the home run. We like it when we win the World Series, etc. So all that we're all sharing, but then he takes the fall. No, to my mind, it's wrong. And by the way, I'm going to predict Alex Rodriguez is going to play tonight. And they're even turning that to their
they're going to sell the place out. Sell the place out, sell a lot more.
Everybody
tickets.
Will be watching. Yeah. And because he will be like the wrestling villain.
Yeah.
Everybody comes to boo him. If he hits a ground ball, and they laugh at him. And then, I guess, but that's a corrupt moment in sport.
I just want to comment is that all of the players who they're talking about suspending right now are Hispanic. And I'm just wondering if they've really found a way now.
Black and Hispanic.
Black,
yes.
And Hispanic, absolutely. And it's and yet there are some in the history of this, like Mark McGuire was one of the worst offenders, right? And he just got a job in baseball.
Still got one.
He just got a new one, right?
Yes. I agree with you that there is this discrimination, particularly against Latin ball players. They are almost serfs. Yeah. They point out, by the way, that if a Japanese ball player comes, he gets a translator But if you come from a Spanish-speaking country, you don't get a translator.
Very good point and very true.
But yeah. They notice it. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the they say that the oppressed always, the oppressor always forgets, but the oppressed always remembers. So we're practically done. I'll just tell you that we're 1813, 200 years ago. The British offensive in Ohio came to a miserable end when they attacked Fort Stevenson on August the 2nd, and it was defended by 160 men under a 22-year-old officer. The attacking army had 1,400 men. It was led by General Proctor, one of the British Army's best. He was good, by the way, and Tecumseh, and it didn't work out. But and just the reason I'm mentioning is that was Brock's idea of a great strategy, was to attack Ohio. As a result, the native people lost all of their homes in Ohio, and everybody claims that he defended Canada. He defended the British retreat in Canada. He did not fight for Canada. He fought for his own homeland. Anyway, you're listening to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We're really grateful Carol could come and help us out, and we'll see you next week.